So there's a lot of email that we get that we don't really cover as often as maybe we should on Ask an Atheist. Speaking of which, you're listening to Ask an Atheist. 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. My name is Sam Mulvey. With me is Rosalind Townsend.
Hello.
And joining us for the second time. You've been on before, right?
Yes, I have. When you came to Tacoma Community College, I was the science officer for the Secular Student Alliance there, and I did a talk about black holes at the time, the first time I was on.
Indeed. And so Donald...
Cernagray.
I actually do have it right. But we do have an email here, and we should talk about it. It is about... like I said, it is a thing we get a lot, and I'll find it in a second here. Ah, boy. This is Carly from Illinois, who writes, I am doing a project for religion class. I need to get different views from different religions, and I was wondering if you could answer this question for me. Is divorce accepted? What is your outlook on it? Can you get remarried after getting a divorce if that means you will have happiness? Carly. So, first things first, no, we're not going to do your homework for you.
No.
It's your assignment. You're the one taking the class. You probably chose to take the class. Do your own work.
You know, this one's not so bad, so I guess I will answer it. But one thing I do get a lot is, which is essentially, hey, can you tell me how bad atheists are for my paper for horrible Christian Bible college? We get right. That more often than we think we realize.
This isn't horrible Christian Bible college, probably.
No, this might actually be somebody in high school. So they might actually not like in the pre-show. I was thinking about it. It's like, I'm just going to rip them a new one. But now that I think about it, I think there might be, I think it might just be somebody who actually has a paper for once.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. What do you think?
It sounds kind of neutral to me. I mean, if you're talking in terms of what my actual opinion is divorce accepted? I can't speak for all people ever, atheists or not atheists or in between. As me being, puny human, I'm my parents were divorced. I'm fine with it.
Right,
they seem relatively the better for it. I'm not married, but in the event that I had to probably get married and ended up getting divorced, if things took a turn, I'd be fine with that too. Like, at the end of the day, I wake up in the morning, I make my coffee. Do I really care?
Right.
Well, and I think what it more comes down to is their question is posed as if atheism is another belief system, but it's really only a stance on one issue, the existence or non-existence of a God and the belief thereof. Any other issue, such as divorce, it's whatever the person that you're talking to thinks. It's not something that atheism in general is talking or thinking about.
It's very personal.
Yeah. Well, having been through a divorce, I can say that divorce is nice.
most people I know who have been through divorces seem to have come through it and go, okay, yeah, things are better now. So,
and I think that's a big part about it is, you're doing a paper on religions, and you're including atheists in that in your paperwork about various religions. That's good. We're not. The whole point of atheism is the lack of religion. I mean, I definitely understand why you would include it in categories about religion. So I'm not going to be one of those people who says you have to put it in its own category, et cetera, et cetera. It makes sense in this context. But for the most part, we lack dogma and tend to be fairly anti-doctrinaire.
Yeah.
So there really is no opinion on this because there's no, there's no considered opinion among atheists. There's no Archbishop of Atheism to tell us that divorce is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the opinions, you're going to have to ask a bunch of individual atheists if you want to get a sense of what atheists think. The only way you're going to go about it is basically statistically.
A thing is, I think even with people who might be religious, I mean, yeah, there's a doctrine and there's the thing that, whatever authority, depending on the religion, will say this is what you should believe in. But I bet there's a lot of wiggle room going on between actual individual believers of any given religion too.
Right.
So,
well, so if you go to Bible college, stop sending us your homework requests. if you're actually someone in school and you need help, keep talking to us. However, cite us.
Yeah. MLA format.
Yeah, no, please. APA format.
APA
please.
Format is far more friendly.
Finger paints.
And we have another email. This one's local. This is Zach from Lakewood, Washington, who writes, I've been having an issue at work with a really nice lady who seems to have been making a point of playing a Christian radio station ever since I mentioned that I'm not religious. We try to allow everyone to select what they like to listen regularly, but prior to mentioning my atheism, we almost never had Christian radio playing. It seems like a passive-aggressive attempt at proselytizing, and it is really getting on my nerves, but I'm not sure the best way to approach the situation because nothing is overt and we all get along well otherwise. Any suggestions? Slayer?
Slayer? Yeah. Engelbert Humperdinck? The thing is the line passive-aggressive was used, and I think that's so Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, it's a line used by the Pacific Northwest, and if you're asking me, it's a line that well describes people from the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah. If you had to pick one adjective, it was that or... I don't know. Well, give me another adjective. I'm from here. I should know this.
Boisterous?
Boisterous! Yeah, okay, anyway. Whatever. Yeah. I would go over the person's head and talk to the boss, frankly. I don't know what you think, but...
Well, what would you say to the boss if you could?
I think it would probably be anything similar to, you know, just kind of bringing up any interpersonal issue where you have to kind of go, hey, you know, whether it would be religious or not, I have an issue with this person. It's done and kind of, it's making me uncomfortable. This is the issue, and maybe try and back up what that discomfort might mean for you. And that does kind of get you into a sticky topic because you're talking about your lack of belief,
yeah,
and how that actually might be making another person uncomfortable. I think a mediator at the end of the day would probably be the best way to try and rectify it. So,
yeah. And when I worked in retail a few years ago, I actually had a similar situation, although the person was far more overt. They weren't playing Christian radio. They would take their lunch breaks at the same time that I would and then play very loudly on their phone sermons from their church and other pastors. So it was a bit more overt. I did end up having to go to management because the company I was working for did have, as part of their employment contract, and kind of an anti-proselytizing clause with respect to both coworkers and patrons of the business. So it's a slightly different experience, but it is going to be something where you're probably going to take the same kind of road, where you talk to management at the very least to get some sort of mediation. Granted, this might result in some, you know, corporate rule that a lot of people don't like where, okay, we're only playing country music or classical or whatever, but at least then you might end up with something more neutral as a resolution.
Can't be country, because, I mean, modern country these days, it is proselytizing music, a lot of it.
True,
so.
Yeah, but something more neutral.
Some part of my concern is, and in a lot of places I've worked where this has been an issue, because it has been an issue for me here and there, the management would not be on my side. And that's something you have to pay attention to, because most of the world, you know, most of the world is religious, sometimes very religious, and it, you know, somebody who's going to see this as part of the Great Commission, and if somebody challenges that, that just means you're somebody who needs converting or perhaps needs to be gone. And how do you approach that? I mean, if you're, you know, with Zach, they're all friendly and they all get along, but then comes the question of why are you guys getting along? Is she just talking to you so that, you know, because... Is she talking to you because she thinks everybody around her believes, or is she talking to you because she wants you to become Christian? It's weird. It's what I'm saying is it's usually not as friendly as it looks when this happens.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's always that kind of, there's a latent subtext whenever someone starts bringing up religion to me. And if that topic comes up, no matter how politely it's couched, it comes up to me and then people start, okay, are they going to proselytize for me? Are they doing this indirectly? There was always just this sort of uncertainty that crops up that... I don't know. I'm starting to sound paranoid, but I can definitely understand being in
Have you actually had anything like this happen to you in the workplace? Or
I've had... They were more educational kind of things. Like when I was in school, I would be talking to someone in a specific class and we'd talk after class. And then that person would go, oh, well, I am in the one circumstance I'm thinking of. It was a person who was very, very Christian. And they went, you know, I heard you talk during the... You know, saying that you were an atheist and da 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 da. Would you like to pray with me? I want to learn more about your atheism. And like it was, they would kind of throw lines at me trying to figure out, you know, how can I reel this person in?
Right.
And it was, I didn't work with them on a daily basis. If worse comes to worse, it was like a quarter of school and then I'd be gone. But eventually it was just, I don't know. I can't even explain how it works. Like, I'm trying to block it out of my memory.
I had a place where we were working in operations. We were making network go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, we had the big switch in the back of the room that would, you know, if your internet was down, we had to check it. And there was this guy, and there's sort of this big argument. We got this boss who was kind of a nut and not particularly good. And one of my fellow Noct technicians kept quoting the Bible as a reason why he would do anything or why the proper choices should be made in this big thread, this flame war. And I'm like, dude, you're not, like, you're like the only one in the room. You're not making, you're not helping your argument here.
The thing is, now I'm seeing like the biblical guide to troubleshooting. So it'll be like, well, if you're having issues with your, I don't know, TCP/IP connection in Leviticus.
Leviticus says to unplug router, wait 30 seconds, plug it back in, or thou shalt be stoned to death and sent to the bad router hut at the edge of the village.
What if your router is made of, I don't know, different fabrics or something?
Routers should be, yeah, fair
and
enough.
Would you really want to handle the router that has been sprinkled with bird's blood?
Ooh.
Sometimes we had to resort to some really weird stuff.
Oh,
it's just the way it is. I had, you know, there was like sacrifices of cigarettes and Twinkies and
was this dial up?
Yes, this
okay,
was.
Okay, that explains.
Of course, this was dial up
so
era. Yeah.
Yeah, I really. They have biblical like guides to the biblical guide to golf, the biblical guide to shorts. I want a biblical guide to like. But it'd be like the Four Dummies books that you see in thrift stores now, because there's so many of them.
Well, you're listening to Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about email and then stuff going on in the news.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
48 hours, 24 hours, 10 minutes to go.
The motorcade appears to have stopped, and yes, it appears as though the governor is getting out now. It's hard to see. My God, the rain is, it's coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. A wave of people are rushing toward the candidate. My God.
Zero. For your consideration, we present Convention and its subject, the nominee, ANNEXradio.com, now on iTunes and Stitcher.
Experience Mile High Humanism at the annual conference of the American Humanist Association, May 7th through 10th in Denver, Colorado. Network with chapter leaders, become a trained humanist celebrant, and hear from Lawrence Krauss, Marcy Hamilton, writers from The Onion, and more. Camp Quest is providing childcare, so bring the kids. High school and college students qualify for reduced registration fees. Go to conference.americanhumanist.org and register today.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And I'm happy to report that number works again, because it didn't work for a while.
Yay.
Nobody told us. I thought maybe we just weren't getting calls.
Send us voicemails.
Yes, voicemails are
Talk
good.
Talk to us.
Yeah. Anyway, we have some people to thank. We have to thank Stephanie from Southfield, Michigan, and Michael from the internet, because that's all we could figure out. They they donated this week to Peggy's Challenge. Peggy's Challenge is the challenge to the listeners of Ask an Atheist from Peggy from Kent to help keep Ask an Atheist going. And possibly my brain at the way things are going. If you would like to contribute to Peggy's Challenge, you can go to askanatheist.tv. Click on the yellow button on the right-hand side. It'll take you right to our PayPal page. Every dollar you give us goes towards keeping the lights on here at the studio, as people are starting to call it the Fortress of Turpitude.
That's new to me.
Yeah, take that as you will. So we're continuing a conversation that we've been having over the last few episodes about the Ken Ham Bill Nye debate. Because once upon a time I said I didn't think it was a bad idea, but I didn't think it did us any favors as a community, I think was my opinion. But my opinion has changed because of this email conversation. This is Sean from Chilliwack, British Columbia. Hope I pronounced it right.
Chilliwack,
got it. Yes. All right. Hi, Sam. It was a pleasant surprise to be listening along to your podcast and then having my name and email read aloud. You were wondering what it was in particular about the Nye Ham debate that set me on my path of freethinking and atheism. Well, I had never heard of Ken Ham before and really didn't think that there were folks anymore who literally believe the obvious parables of the Bible. Oh, you're lucky, man.
Very lucky.
Basically, Ham's argument was that the Bible tells him about creation and that no one alive today was there to observe it or to refute it. Bill Nye's argument had many examples of simple science, trees with more than 6,000 growth rings, ice cores with thousands of layers, and so on. I think the most telling thing for me was the final question posed to both. What would change your mind? For Ham, it was nothing. For Nye, it was evidence. That one debate got me off my complacent butt and prompted me to actually read the Bible. Who knew it was such a horrible book? From there, I have been soaking in all the free-thinking, skeptical, atheist documentation I can get my hands on. That is a fantastic... Because there's this things about debates. We've talked about this again and again and again, is I love debate. Debate's great. Debate's fun. Mm. It's my favorite contact sport. You know.
Full contact debating?
Hey, if you're doing it right. but I... Especially, like, when I was on... Think Out Loud down in Oregon for the whole In God We Trust thing in Clark County. I was on, it wasn't really a debate, but it was a conversation with the lady who does the In God We Trust thing, whose name escapes me. And everybody said, oh, she sounded terrible. And I was like, yeah, the best thing I could do for my side was to say nothing and just let her talk.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, I know those situations. Both parties walk away feeling like they won. And because she's like, well, I got to spread the word and say nice things and act all political and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm like, well, she sounded like an idiot. I won.
Yeah.
And
well, if it makes you feel better.
Yeah, I suppose. But that's the thing, is it's really hard unless you do something like they did with like the Intelligence Squared stuff, where they do votes before and afterwards to figure out if people's minds have been changed. But even that has the feeling of like a church house conversion, where the same five people keep accepting the Lord new in their heart every week just to keep the numbers flowing. So I always kind of wonder if, you know, I've always wondered if people who actually change their minds. And apparently they do. Surprise!
Which is refreshing. I think.
There's hope for us yet.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Any debate that I've ever taken part in, the reason why I've been on a panel for a debate is because... I'm not expecting to change the other person's mind, and most of the time I'm not expecting to hear any new arguments. Very rarely am I surprised on that.
Yeah.
But I'm there because usually, even if there's just one person in the audience who's kind of sitting on the fence or just looking for more information, and even if I don't change their mind, but I kind of send them out looking for more information, for me, that makes the entire effort worth it.
Right, right.
It's a matter of spreading knowledge and getting people to start thinking for themselves. And oftentimes that sounds possibly slightly condescending, but the thing is that a lot of times the people in the audience there's at least one person who might believe but then they might be having those little inklings of doubt, which they're always told, you know, the devil's tempting you or something of that nature.
Yeah.
But if I get them to go out and just even look at other information, crack open a science book, then the end result is almost always inevitably that they do start thinking in a way that they weren't used to, and they start exploring whole new facets of the universe, and everything opens up for them. And that's what I look for.
Like I said, I hadn't really seen all the debate. I'd seen a couple clips, but I knew the whole what would change your mind question, and Ken Ham saying nothing and Bill Nye saying evidence. I thought that was the killer line.
Yeah.
It's like, that's great.
There's
like
a lot of punch there.
I'm willing to change my mind. He's not. That for me is, yeah, that's the killer line. That's the line that makes it. But then I thought about it. It's like, well, a lot of people might see that as strength on the part of Ken Ham and stuff like that. It sort of took the wind out of my sails. It's like, yeah, I see there's strength there, but is that strength actually going to change anything? And again, I'm ecstatic that it did, at least in one case.
It kind of brings, yeah, definitely. I think that's great. Yeah. It brings me to kind of a weird question, though. And it makes me wonder, being an audience member, like, I didn't go to the debate or anything like that.
Right, right.
But when I think about the idea of what sways the, you know, the masses, if you will, what would be more persuasive, a person who has strength of conviction or a person who is considered more open-minded, at the risk of sounding a bit wishy-washy or flip-floppy?
Sure, yeah.
And then maybe I'm looking at it too much through a politics sort of purview instead of a, you know, existence of God type. I don't know.
Well, when you're talking about changing your mind with evidence, in this case, Bill Nye was fairly careful about the way that he phrased it. Bill Nye, when he phrased his answer about how evidence could change his mind, he gave specific examples. At that point in time, he was basically illustrating his answer in contrast to Ken Ham's was, this is how a scientist thinks, this is how science works. If you want to change something that is currently thought to be true, you want to change my mind, this is the kind of evidence and standards of evidence you're going to need.
Right.
Versus the creationist thinking of, I'm going to start with this conclusion, and then I'm going to cherry pick things that I think support it, even though they really don't. But that's a whole other issue.
Right.
Well, and interestingly enough, Bill Nye has made good on that statement and has recently changed his opinions on GMOs.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Based on the data he was receiving. Because when we interviewed him in 2013, he was for the labeling law that was happening here in Washington State. And he was like, well, there are some problems with GMOs. And this was right after he had his talk where he was talking about the importance of how important geoengineering and basically management of the environment mm-hmm. on an active basis is going to be for the future of humanity. And I'm like, wouldn't genetically modified things really be a good tool to solve some of those problems? He's like, well, you know, the thing about the ecosystem, and he gave kind of a dodging answer.
Yeah.
Not why I had him on the air, so I just kind of let it go at that.
Yeah.
But now he's like, yeah, I talked to some scientists. I read the science and some scientists probably. and I think the evidence supports, you know, GMOs or something to that effect. Yeah.
And I mean, for me personally, that lends toward me being more easily persuaded than like the ability of someone to go, hey, oh, I changed my mind on something.
Right.
But I don't know.
Well, and for Bill Nye, it actually goes even further. I did get an autographed copy of his book, Undeniable. And in that book, there is a chapter where he talks about GMO labeling and how he's kind of wishy-washy on the issue and is in favor of the labeling. After he really explored the science behind GMOs, he has actually come out in a couple interviews and even his own YouTube video where he's basically saying he is now issuing a correction, a new chapter that replaces that one that is based on the new science that he got from people who are in genetic engineering of crops and agriculture. And so this is going to be a whole new chapter that goes over the science of what he learned and why he changed his mind. So he's issuing a correction for that.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's cool.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, definitely.
Downstairs, I have the Ken Ham book. Robert Ray got it for me of the debate. And yeah. Which should be titled "What I Meant to Say."
What I meant to say and why I win.
Yeah, why I won. Yeah, it's so I can't believe I'm about to say this. Ham-fisted.
Wow.
Yeah, it is so horrible. And I mean, like I said, I didn't want to buy it because I'd be given money to Answers to Genesis. Yeah. But I'm glad I got it because it is hilarious. anything to say about the concept of science as Ken Ham had it? He's like weird two classes of science, like science on Sundays.
Yeah,
and
the way that Ken Ham tries to divides sciences. He has this idea that there's something that he calls observational science, which he says, well, you take these observations and measurements in a lab and you do science and create new technology from that. And then there's this historical science where you look at things in the past and you kind of think of what could happen, have possibly maybe done this thing. The thing is that in terms of science, it's all one thing. There is no division between observational and historical science.
Right.
When you're recreating something from the past via biology, paleontology, archaeology, astronomy, what you're using is evidence that you have in front of you current, and you are backdating that. It's the same idea of if you look in your trash, you can tell what you threw away, what you maybe ate for dinner a few days ago, by looking at what is at the bottom of the trash bag, even though you aren't there currently to observe it. It's the same kind of idea. You can reconstruct the story of what led to this thing that's sitting in front of you right now that you are taking data on.
Yeah. Yeah. So what Kem Ham is suggesting is that you actually had cacavon when it transformed into like a hungry man TV dinner in your in your garbage. Oh, I love it. I love that stuff. Have a couple more announcements. Seattle Atheists will be hosting Rebecca Witzman at the Town Hall Seattle on Tuesday, May 26th at 7 p.m. to talk about the work being done by the Humanist Disaster Recovery Teams of Foundation Beyond Belief, something she talked about here a few weeks ago. And then on June 4th, at the Hall at Fauntleroy, Seattle Atheists will welcome Seth Andrews of the Thinking Atheist podcast. Doors open at 6 for a reception before the talk, which will be followed by a signing of his new book, Sacred Cows. Tickets for both events will be available at Brown Paper Tickets, and more information will be available at seattleatheist.org and meetup.com/seattleatheists. And I suspect we may be talking to Seth Andrews again if he's in town. I think that'll be fun.
That would be very fun.
So we should probably enter into the obtuse triangle. Okay, the First Church of Cannabis filed paperwork to register the church and declare its nonprofit status in the state of Indiana. The Colorado-based Green Ministries Incorporated believes the state's recently passed religious freedom law protects the church from legal repercussions of using marijuana. Indiana prohibits the use of marijuana for recreational and medical purposes. The new law, however, stops the state from substantially burdening a person's religious practice without a compelling government interest. Wow.
Good on them?
Yeah. Have fun with that.
Yeah.
This is here we are, is if religious freedom trumps everything else, which is what they're trying to do in Indiana, then there essentially is no law, because what religion kind of does is take over everything. The more you give the religion, it's an amoeba. The more you give it, the more it'll try and run for you.
Mm-hmm.
And if everything you do is in the service of your religion, which a lot of people say they do, which is why they have those huge mansions and private jets and gold toilets and the like, then nothing they do is illegal. I'm allowed to extort money from my parishioners because my religion says it's allowed and it's in the service of my religion. All of this crap becomes possible.
And you say it as an exaggerated joke, but it is basically what people are gunning for at this point.
It's basic. Well, yeah, I'm not going to give you pizza for your wedding.
Aw.
Why would you ever have pizza?
I know. Well, Becky was talking about this in the pre-show. That church, there's that pizzeria who said they wouldn't give pizza to, they wouldn't serve pizza at a gay wedding. And yeah, that raises the question, who has, well, my family, but.
It was a wedding in a Chuck E. Cheese, maybe.
Something like that. Yeah, our wedding. Yeah, actually, we had pizza at our wedding. Sadly, not gay. But the other thing is they got death threats.
Right.
Which is crap.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, just give them reason to, because everybody, all of these people in Indiana who are in favor of this law, all they're thinking about this law is persecution, persecution, persecution. Mm-hmm. How can I look persecuted to justify this law? Congratulations!
Yeah.
They've got it now, and they've got $900,000 from ignorant people to boot.
I'm being repressed.
Yeah, have a nice shiny lacquered block box of oppression and you can wave it.
Which, you know, horrible slippery slope arguments I just made aside, I think might have been the point in the case of this pizzeria. They're like, they saw this as like, wow, we can pretend we're repressed and make a whole lot of money and not even have to make pizza anymore.
Yeah.
That's kind of my suspicion.
Do you think their pizza was even any good?
In Indiana? Are you kidding?
I'm thinking not.
A Wiccan high priest wrote a letter to Georgia legislatures in support of a religious freedom bill similar to one recently passed in Indiana. The high priest Dusty Dione of Washington State, hey, wrote the letter thanking Georgia legislators for opening many doors for our brothers and sisters of the craft. Dion explained his reasoning in an interview with the Daily Beast, saying he thought the bills were horrible, but that if they are going to open up this can of worms, we're going to shove it right in their face.
Free-range Wiccan worms.
Yeah, they're actually talking about doing... I know there's a group of Wiccans who are actually talking about doing some their service thing in front of the state house in Indiana, which is perfect. complete with maybe having sex on the... I don't know. which I think is fantastic. Yeah. Go with it. I'm still waiting for the Satanists to speak up on this one.
I'm sorry, I read the quote and I just thought they were going to like show the craft, like the movie.
Go to, why like, would you do that? We're trying to make them not feel persecuted. Why would
the soundtrack wasn't that bad.
Talking about the soundtrack. Jeez.
Well, what would be really interesting is if it passes and the Wiccan groups get their protection, there are certain rituals within the Wiccan belief system that many practitioners take part in, especially during rainstorms, where quite literally you will have people walking skyclad down the street, which basically means naked.
Yeah. Naked for those of you playing at home.
Yes, enjoying the rain.
Yeah.
Which means that your public indecency laws are now have an exemption due to religious freedom. Oh, no, wait, I'm Wiccan. I'm doing my skyclad rain ritual. You can't arrest me for public indecency. I think that will be hilarious.
See, I think that should be legal everywhere, to be honest with you. And yeah. And I should back up a bit and say this: me pretending to not know what's happening with this Wiccan stuff is a complete joke. I know I know all of this stuff. I used to be in the New Age movement before I did the atheism thing. And should that actually be illegal? I don't know. I don't really think so. But
yeah,
do it at the state house, because why not?
Exactly.
You know, that'll be great. I this whole thing, I mean, I hate that this law was passed, and I know I just lost a bunch of whatever fans in Indiana we had because I made a crack about their pizza, but it's a nice place. It doesn't deserve this. There are nice people there. It's, you know, and I hate that laws like this exist. With that said, I'm loving the response. I mean, this month I've got some hope for the way the country is going, because man, nobody seems to like this thing. I mean, you know, you got the Chick-fil-A thing happening again, but you've got like the Indy 500 people saying no. Mm-hmm. You've got, you know, multi-billion-dollar corporations going no, thank you, because we need these people to do our jobs. You've got you know, business is closing. You've got Gen Con, you know, which is a geek mecca, if you will, saying, maybe not in Indiana anymore. Mm. They're saying the Final Four might go somewhere else. Like, all these big corporations, they're saying, look, if you do this, this hurts our business. And you can complain and say that, oh, it's big business complaining that that's getting this moving. It's not complaints from the public. But this is one of those situations where the reason they're complaining is because they're saying the public doesn't like it.
Right.
And do you think this guy's got this governor guy whose name I can't even remember right
Mr.
now?
Mr. Guy. Governor Guy.
Yeah. Governor. Governor Joke.
Governor Joke.
Do you think he's got a second term in him? I don't know. I think he might, because politics is weird.
Yeah. I don't know how that works.
It's going to really depend on where his constituents stand when it comes to the next election. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. But it sounds like, you know, if, hey, all the businesses leave Indiana, the constituency might have something to say about that.
Exactly.
Well, that might actually create a weird that might create like a weird positive feedback cycle where they pass dumb laws. People who don't like dumb laws leaving the people who Becky's trying really hard to tell me that the governor's name is Mike Pence, unrealizing that I really just wanted to call him Governor Joke.
She just made a PowerPoint presentation.
She did. She just like, wrote a PowerPoint presentation.
His name is Mike Pence.
His name is Mike Pence.
There was MIDI music.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I really, yeah. Was it really necessary to include the dancing baby? That's so 1998, Becky. Come on, can we move on?
Indiana can keep that one.
Yeah.
They'll keep the dancing baby and, like, bad pizza, and all the other legit businesses will leave.
Man, if you're in Indiana and you're a listener of Ask an Atheist, one, feel free to contact me and yell at me for all the bad things we're saying about your state, but I would not mind hearing some boots on the ground stories on this one, because I imagine there is. Because when something like this happens, people come out, things start happening, and you know, are people putting up signs? I kind of wish they did. Mm-hmm. You know, because it used to say if you're going to, there, somebody was saying in an amendment where if you're going to discriminate, you have to put up a sign saying that you're going to discriminate, which is such a weird change because now, because the people are saying, no, we're not going to do that because we have a right to, where, oh, in the South, in the 60s,
yeah,
they were kind of proud of doing that. And I suppose in some weird way, in some sort of sick, broken way, that's kind of progress. You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go into a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about relativity, I believe. Wow. Way above my head.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Billy! I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it will explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island nation of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
Hey, podcast listeners.
Did you know that Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey is a radio show?
Radio waves and everything.
If you know of a radio station that could benefit from Ask an Atheist in your area, let us know.
And don't forget to let the station know you'd love to hear us.
So to help us humanize atheists in mass media, email us at stations@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And I was informed that I should tell you that the worst pizza I ever had was in Dayton, Ohio. There you go. Speaking of Dayton, Ohio.
Nice segue.
Yeah, whatever. Well, we're not calling it Moment of Science, because Moment of Science is sort of Dan's deal. But now we're doing a lot more physics and astrophysics stuff, too, with Donald here. And he's going to tell us about, I believe, special relativity.
Yes, I am. So kind of what prompted this is that several weeks ago, a listener sent in a question asking about the multiverse idea. And I jumped in and said, oh, I could answer that. But in order to do so, I'm going to have to do a lot of lead up and explain a lot of other concepts. So today, in this moment of astrophysics, this is going to be the first that is going to cover some basic concepts that I can refer to when answering some questions about complex subjects. Today, I'm going to be covering the speed of light and some of the strange happenings that occur near this speed. Many of you may have heard time and again that nothing can travel faster than light. However, most people don't realize how amazingly fast light is or what can result from this cosmic speed limit. The speed of light has been measured to be 299,792,458 plus or minus 1.2 meters per second. That's 186,000 miles per second in a vacuum. This is a constant, which is why physicists call it C. It's also a really big number. And the problem with really big numbers is that very few people, even scientists, are able to wrap their heads around really big numbers. So to put this in perspective, in 1 second, a beam of light would travel the distance from the Earth to the orbit of the Moon. It took Apollo astronauts on average 3 days to reach lunar orbit. And this was after launching on top of the most powerful rocket we have ever built to date. Light is fast, but it also has some tricks up its sleeve. In physics, any space where an observer is moving at constant velocity, your direction doesn't matter, such as on a plane or sitting in your house or sitting on a train or a cruise ship, is called an inertial frame of reference. The neat thing about inertial frames of reference is that the laws of physics in all inertial frames of reference apply exactly the same. There's no need to adjust for accelerations or changes in acceleration. So if you toss a ball into the air, the behavior of the ball is exactly the same in all inertial frames of reference. So here's a little thought experiment. We're going to ignore for a moment that nothing with a mass greater than zero can travel at the speed of light. So let's say that I'm on a rocket ship traveling at the speed of light towards Saturn when my internal lights go out. I turn on a flashlight to look for the backup power switch on the panel in front of me. In my frame of reference, I'm traveling at a constant velocity, and thus the light coming from my flashlight is going at C, the speed of light, and illuminates the panel, letting me see the switch that I need. Now let's switch to you on the ground with a telescope, looking at me and my rocket ship, and you measure my velocity as C. Then I switch the flashlight on. What do you see? Those who remember high school or introductory physics may remember something about adding velocities for, say, a dog running in a train, where the velocity of the train is added to the velocity of the dog. So if you apply the same thinking, you'd measure the light from the flashlight as 2C. But wait, that doesn't quite seem right, because you just measured the speed of light to be something other than the speed of light. All right, so then the solution must be something like the light doesn't leave the flashlight, which is traveling at C, thus I'm still stuck in the dark in my rocket ship. But this also doesn't quite seem right, because then the speed of light in my reference frame, according to you, would then not be the speed of light. Here's where light comes in. The speed of light in a vacuum is the same in all frames of reference. I told you it has some tricks up its sleeve. This means that the speed of light measured by every observer in every frame of reference will be the same. This is called the principle of relativity. So here's the real solution. In my frame of reference, distances measured in the same direction that I'm traveling are shortened. This is known as length contraction, meaning that the beam of light from my flashlight travels a shorter distance because my rocket ship is contracted. I can see the panel. In your frame of reference, time for me is ticking slower. Thus, when you see the flashlight turn on, it does light up the panel because the beam travels the distance in a longer time. This is called time dilation. In both frames of reference, the speed of light coming from the flashlight is still measured as C. Length contraction and time dilation come from Einstein's special theory of relativity, which in essence showed that what we once thought were constants, space and time, are relative and malleable, and that the speed of light is the actual constant of the cosmos. Experiments done every day around the world have well established these phenomena. For example, when a cosmic ray hits the top of Earth's atmosphere, a particle called a muon is produced from the collision. Muons have such short decay times that given the distance from the top of our atmosphere to the surface, 100 kilometers or 62 miles, they should have already decayed and we should never detect any down here on Earth's surface. Yet we detect millions of them every day in detectors. The reason is that muons are traveling near C, and thus their clocks tick slower from our reference frame. They have plenty of time to come to the surface, and from their perspective, the length needed to travel to the surface is contracted, and they reach the surface with time to spare. I've got one more experiment that our listeners can do at home. You can actually measure the speed of light using a microwave and some marshmallows, or a large chocolate bar. First, you want to look at your microwave label and write down the operating frequency. Normally, microwaves are somewhere between 2 and 3 gigahertz. Gigahertz means billion hertz and is the number of wave peaks that passes by a stationary point in 1 second. Next, you want to take out the rotation plate from your microwave. Have a microwave-safe plate and lay out your marshmallows touching in a line along that plate. Put that plate in a corner of your microwave so that the line of marshmallows goes from the corner of the microwave to the center, and microwave them for about 7 to 10 minutes. You should see that some of the marshmallows are being toasted, and when the toasting is enough for you to clearly see, stop the microwave and take them out. If you measure the distance between two of your toasted marshmallows, it should be somewhere around 10 to 13 centimeters, 3.9 to 5.2 inches, depending on your microwave frequency. This is the wavelength, the distance between two peaks of your microwave. So using the pieces of information, you can now calculate the speed of light by multiplying the frequency by the distance you just measured. This should be close to about 30 billion centimeters, or 11.8 billion inches per second, which is the 300 million meters per second, or 984 million feet per second, speed of light. You can do the same with a chocolate bar, looking for the warm, soft spots, and make yourself a speed of light s'more. So today we covered how fast light is, and how time and space behave, keeping C constant. However, when we look at distances in space, we find that the speed of light can also be frustratingly slow. But I'm saving that one for next time. For now, I encourage you all to stay curious and to keep asking questions.
If you have a science-based question that you would like Dan or Donald to answer, you can go to askanatheist.tv, click on the shiny red candy-like button, and ask your question, and we'll answer it here on the show. Now we're talking about radio, and radio is something I actually know about, which is pretty cool. I forget that because I, you know, everybody knows about the time contraction. Well, not everybody, but I mean, they do it in science fiction. They do it in Star Trek, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
I forget that there's an actual spatial compression going on.
Yes.
I thought that was just for kicks, but there's actual spatial compression going on.
Yes, there is.
Wouldn't that screw up your liver?
Well, it's
what doesn't.
the length contraction happens in your frame of reference. The thing is that you wouldn't necessarily notice it. So in an inertial frame of reference, everything looks the same. So say this room is traveling near the speed of light in some direction. We wouldn't notice it, but an outside observer would notice that our clock on the wall is ticking very slowly, but would also notice that this room seems very crunched.
Yeah.
But we, inside that frame of reference, don't notice it. So it's a little... It's a matter of frame of reference that you're talking about. So,
right.
But if we were to take out, say, a ruler and I were to measure across the room, to us it would look the same as we're traveling at this high speed. But as soon as I take out a measuring stick, well, that measuring stick is also contracted. So you're not going to notice internally. That's the whole point of the principle of relativity, is that no matter which inertial frame of reference you're in, there shouldn't be any indication of what velocity you're moving at if it's an inertial frame of reference.
Right. I also like the marshmallow visualization of wavelength. I wish I had known that one back when I was trying to get Becky to get her ham radio license to explain wavelength.
I was going to say, I learned how to destroy my microwave, and I learned some stuff about physics today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can also say that the microwave functions in the 2.4 gigahertz band, which is why Wi-Fi is also in the 2.4 gigahertz band, because they both have to be registered as radio transmitters, because that's what they are!
Exactly.
And I had to explain to somebody that their microwave was a little bit terrifying, because it completely took out all Wi-Fi within about a block.
Oh.
Like, but I have tried cooking a burrito with my router.
Well, in the ham radio thing, one of the bands that we're allowed to transmit on is 10 gigahertz, a little bit higher than 2.4. And people have had, you know, we're with ham radio with like HF bands and VHF bands, you're tens of miles or thousands of miles away. When you work 10 gigahertz, you're basically in the same field, because that's really, it's one, it's really point to point, and two, it's not the kind of beam you want to be in front of.
No.
Because they also cook their lunches in the same with the same equipment they transmit with.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I can cook my burrito.
Yes.
Yeah. Get your ham radio license,
okay,
and you can cook a burrito. That is the weirdest sell for a dying hobby that I think I've ever done. Oh, jeez.
They should hire me for marketing.
So you mentioned in the pre-show that they've got the LHC turned on and they're sending data out.
Yeah. Actually, today, earlier this
that
morning.
That would be the Large Hadron
Collider.
Collider. Yeah. I did pronounce that right.
Yeah.
The
Large Hadron or Hadron. Both pronunciations are correct. Collider in
Older.
CERN. I got, saw both a news story and got an email today that the Large Hadron Collider is now successfully back online at a higher power level than what it was previously operating at. And data is coming out to offsite teams that are currently using that data for research or hoping to use that new data for research. So there is a team at the University of Washington that works with the LHC, and I got an email from, you know, if you're interested in research, we are getting data, we can do stuff now, so.
Well, are they still looking, I imagine they're not looking for the Higgs anymore. What are they looking for in these things?
Well, a lot of times, what now they're hoping to find is the dark matter particle or particles. We have kind of constraints on what it should look like and what its properties should be, but not exactly what it is. So we're hoping that these higher energy collisions will produce something that fits these parameters that we can kind of talk about. There are other teams that are still looking for other Higgs, which would then lend credence to this idea of something called...
There's more than one Higgs?
Yes, there are models of particle physics.
This is like Steve Jobs and his IMAX, isn't
it? Well, there are other models of particle physics that rely on this idea called supersymmetry. Mm-hmm. And if this idea is correct, that means that there would also be supersymmetric partners to the Higgs, and there could actually be upwards of, I think the last count that I read about was maybe 5 or 6 different Higgs at different masses and energy levels, but they all help the Higgs field and the mechanism still impart mass to other fundamental particles, but there would just be 6 different flavors of the Higgs due to supersymmetry.
Grape Higgs.
Yeah, they did the plaid flower one for the hippies. I remember that one, yeah. Another thing we talk about is, and this is the kind of conversations I have with Donald, is the reactionless thruster thing that I kind of think is cool for really dumb reasons, but you think it is not a thing.
The thing is that with reactionless thrusters, what it ends up doing is it ends up actually, well, for one thing, it breaks a certain law of physics known as the conservation of momentum.
Right.
So,
which is right up there with the thermodynamics stuff that everybody likes to talk about. Right?
Yes. And yes, I am... We'll be getting to a moment of astrophysics where I talk about the laws of thermodynamics. Stay tuned, but that'll be coming up later. But basically, the way that these reactionless engines are trying to work is in the vacuum of space, you have these particles that are constantly popping into and out of existence. They pop into existence in a pair of a particle and an antiparticle, and then they recombine and annihilate almost immediately. So the idea of some of these EM drives, electromagnetic field drives, is that you're pumping enough energy that these particles cease being real and you manifest them as real particles that you can then push against and get momentum out of.
Right.
But then not only are you then violating conservation of energy because they have to eventually annihilate somewhere, but then you're violating momentum because the amount of energy you had to pump into them is more than the momentum that you can get back from them. And so you're saying, I'm getting forward momentum by... using more energy that I'm getting, kind of ish. So those are some of the problems that can run into it. Now, there are certain mathematical constructs that show that there is a way to get something similar to work, but the devices that have been advertised as being tested by the EagleWorks lab at NASA don't operate in such a way, at least as far as I can tell off of what I understand from them, that would actually produce thrust beyond this noise in their electronic equipment, which is... Yeah,
talking nanonewtons, right?
Yeah, we're talking nano and micronewtons of thrust is what they're measuring, but their error bars are upwards of 20 to 100 micronewtons, and they're like, oh, look, we measured 29 micronewtons of thrust inside of a proper vacuum chamber.
So is this NASA being taken, or what's the personnel angle here?
Well, EagleWorks Laboratory is kind of an independent research laboratory that gets funding from NASA. So it's under the general NASA umbrella. But the teams there have their own research projects, and they can get grants and funding from other places. Probably the project that many listeners may be familiar with is that there's a researcher there named Dr. Stephen White, Sonny White, who is trying to use an interferometer to find small-scale warping of space-time. He's trying to see if the warp drive is something that would be possible under Alcubierre's warp drive metric. So it's the same group is looking into other propulsion technology, and they just happened to hear about a company in Italy that advertised this EM drive, and so they got 2 of their models, purposely broke one of them so that way they could use it as a control, and have been testing both of them, and they're getting the same anomalous thrust from both engines.
Can I have that job? I take a hammer to broken, horrible technology. I really liked reading up on this because... it was math that I understood in a physics paper for once, and I felt simultaneously really intelligent, incredibly stupid, and totally ridiculous.
Oh, I was just going to talk about the wondrous job of breaking stuff at NASA. I mean, it's innovative. It's for a good cause, the furthering of technology and scientific, you know, pursuits, and then you get to be clumsy and break stuff.
Yeah, I'm good at that. If you take a look at this studio, that's pretty much.
Now, the more tantalizing one is that there is another device that they're looking at that operates in a different way, which is far more plausible, but they need something that's far more sensitive to detect the thrust coming out of it. So,
and that's all the time we've got for today. If you'd like notes on this one, you can go to askanatheist.tv and click on the notes. This is Ask an Atheist with me, Sam Mulvey. On the air today with me was Donald Cerner-Gray and Rosalind Townsend. I'd like to thank Rebecca Friedman and Dave Brulette for my writers. You can go to askanatheist.tv. Leave us a phone number at 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. See you guys next week.